From what you were telling me before you started recording, the job of choosing a nursing home, it's a process that it's really not best to start it at the last minute.
Absolutely not. In fact, we encourage people. I myself have already, my husband and myself, you know, we're in our mid-40s, and we're already looking at, okay, not only that plan, you know, the long-term care insurance route, but also not, it's, what do we want to look for in a nursing home? What type of nursing home are we looking for? Where is the location? Do we want to be closer to our kids, or, you know, do we want to have our own autonomy and they can come to us? Do we want to look at a type of facility that has a continuum of care built in? That means that we could live on a campus in, after we leave our home, we could live in an apartment, but then we could slowly, as our health declines, move to a different location, but we would still be able to see the same faces and kind of the same type of philosophies that that campus has. Now, those don't exist everywhere, so again, would we possibly have to move to a different geographic location? Those are decisions that we're already starting to make so that we can be in charge of those decisions and they don't have to be a reactive, they're more proactive type of decisions.
When we're talking about moving, you know, the possibility that you might have to move to find the right nursing home, what role does having family members and friends nearby play when you balance all the factors? Do having people you know nearby, is that as important as what you perceive to be the quality of care at that nursing home?
Well, you know, unfortunately, sometimes yes, it is. We get a lot, as the advocate, we will get a lot of calls from time to time from family members who state, make comments such as, well, I have to go in every single day, and I have to be there at lunch, or I have to go in every day because they never walk my mother, or my mother's always there and she's soiled. So we don't like to hear that because that's not really what they're supposed to do. When you go in to visit a loved one, the visit should be more of a social visit. It should be there so that it's fulfilling that social need, not that medical need. That's what the facility it both is getting money for, whether it's out of your personal pocket or whether it's out of the pocket of the state. And it's also the promise that they made when they said, this is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to take care of your loved one. So, you know, although I like to hear that someone is close because you always want to have that visitor, we want to make sure that, those visits aren't to provide that care that the facility is required to provide. So is it a good thing? Yes, it's always a good thing to be close to people. And it doesn't necessarily have to be your relatives. A lot of times we'll have people say, well, yes, I know my daughter or son is in the Decatur area, but really all my coffee buddies and all my friends are in the Champaign area. So I want to stay here in the Champaign area. We might get a call from a family member saying, no, I want to just move my dad here to Decatur. And we will advocate for dad to stay in the location he wants to stay in. It's where he's going to feel the most fulfilled.
So there's no, obviously there's no one set answer to that question.
Again, and you have to understand there's a lot of people who have no family whatsoever. So what is important is for that person to look at a facility that they'll be able to stand up for themselves and advocate for themselves in. Not having that, you don't have to have that family member there to be your advocate. You know, you want to be able to do that for yourself. And that's a role that my program plays is for those people who have no one, or who might have a family member that doesn't visit, or they might have a family member that doesn't feel strong enough to advocate for them, that's what we'll do.
In Dan Petrella's report, that report focused on the rating of nursing homes provided through the Medicare.gov website by the federal government. How is it, are there things to remember when interpreting those ratings?
Absolutely. And, you know, you've got your proponents of that, and you've got your opponents to that. A lot of people are like, no, that's just worthless. No, it's not. It is a solid rating, but there are problems with it. There's three different categories that CMS, the federal government, takes into effect when they're looking at those star ratings. One of them is a staffing ratio. So when someone looks at that column, they say, okay, well, this facility has 3 out of 5 stars, and this facility has 1 out of 5 stars. Now, one of the problems with that category is that the report that the facility is to fill out to report the number of staff per resident, it's a little tricky. And so sometimes facilities either don't fill it out correctly, but you have your public health system that is double-checking on that continuously. And so sometimes a viewer might even look at that and there might not be any star included. It might not say, or it might say not available. So that kind of skews the rating a little bit. One of the other things is the categories, is how has that facility done on recent public health surveys? Now, if you've got a facility that is constantly in the 4 and the 5 star rating, there, that means that public health has gone into the facility, whether it's on a complaint or whether it's on their annual licensure survey, and they have done very well. And public health does a very comprehensive view anytime that they go in there, whether it's on an individual complaint or whether it is that more comprehensive facility survey. So that's a really good column to look at. If you've got a facility that is constantly in that 1 and that 2 star ratings, you've got a facility that they are not following the regulations that they should be to keep their residents safe. The other third category is where the most contention comes in, and that is that quality assurance, that quality improvement type of thing. Where that runs into problems is let's say you have a facility over here that is a really good facility, and they really follow the rules and regulations, and they've got a great social environment for their residents, and their nursing staff is top-notch. Over a couple of blocks away, you've got a very bad facility that is not providing even the medical care that is needed. There's pressure sores. There might be unexplained falls all the time. So what happens is that all of a sudden, the family member says, I am taking mom out of this facility over here, this bad facility, and I'm going to put her in the good one. Well, when she goes into the good one, let's say she arrives there with a really big pressure sore that the bad facility didn't take care of. Well, that quality indicator is still going to take into effect that in this facility, this woman has a pressure sore. It doesn't look at where it developed and where it was able to continue. It just looks at as a snapshot in time. And so, unfortunately, sometimes your good facilities kind of get penalized for some of the actions of the bad ones. That's one of the biggest hiccups in that 5-star rating, and they're working on that. They're looking to have that system improved. We always tell people that whenever they do see that and they have a question, call the Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program. We are not going to give you a recommendation. I'm not going to say you need to put your mom in this facility or don't put your mom in this facility. But I will tell you that these are the consistent problems that the Ombudsman Program sees when they're in that facility doing all of their regular presence. These are the type of problems that we have with administrators. These are the problems that we have with the owners of the facilities. We will let them know the types and the continuous problems that are occurring so that when they're looking at the facilities, they can get the sense of, well, if I have a problem here myself as a resident or for my mom, it doesn't sound like they're going to listen to me, because if they didn't listen to the advocate, who is much more bossy and snotty about it, then they're not going to listen to me. So that will help that person kind of plan ahead and say, you know what, that's a headache I don't want.
When money is tight, and I have to assume that a lot of people who are considering a nursing home for their future or for a family member, that the situation is going to be is that they're just going to have to turn to Medicare or Medicaid at some point or another. When that factor comes in, how does that limit the choices in nursing homes?
Well, and there's very few homes, even really throughout the United States, that are just 100% private pay. You do have those homes, and they're great homes, but unfortunately, the majority of the long-term care facilities out there, they recognize or you know, that in the community, there is the need for the payment source to be your Medicaid system and your Medicare for the recovery and rehab. That does, just because a facility takes Medicaid and Medicare does not mean that they're going to have a lower level of care. It shouldn't mean that. And the reason it shouldn't mean that is the rules and the regulations governing the care of the facility residents is this exact same. Unfortunately, what happens is you have a for-profit business that is saying, well, I've got to make a certain level of profit, so let's maybe not pay the CNAs, you know, as much of a wage, or let's maybe not hire as many CNAs. And so that's when care starts suffering. I do understand and we do recognize and appreciate that the state is, you know, 6 months and farther behind on their bills, and that is a problem. It is. But unfortunately, from an advocate's point of view, time and time again, I see these problems that are occurring and I hear that concern, but then I go on to the Department of Human and Family Services, their website, and I see a cost report that a for-profit owner turned in last year that has his profit margin way up there close to $1 million. So somewhere along the line, that 6 months that the state is behind in paying him, it's not hurting him so bad that he couldn't reinvest that into the residents that he promised to take care of.
Is that a reason to be a little more suspicious of for-profit nursing homes compared to non-profit ones?
Well, the thing about it is we do see a difference between for-profit and not-for-profit homes. I think sometimes we see, even in the faith-based homes, we see that difference because there seems to be, you know, when we're talking to an administrator or we're talking even to a business manager of the for-profit home as compared to a not-for-profit in a faith-based home, there's a difference even in language. It is, well, we've got to do a bottom line. You know, even in a for-profit home, the difference is in several of our for-profit homes, they've cut the activity budget. There is no activity budget at all. The residents have to come up with what they want to do on their own. You know, that means there's no parties, or a lot of times you'll see staff members who will put in their own money. They'll put in a kitty, and they'll say, you know what, the residents want to buy this movie, so the activity director will buy it out of her own pocket. But in a not-for-profit home or in a faith-based home, those type of things, there's more of an understanding of it's not the profit we're going to make, it's how much are we going to please the residents that are there. And there's a total difference of viewing. We see that more social model in that not-for-profit home and in that faith-based home than, unfortunately, we do in a lot. Now, I'm not going to say all, because there are some of our for-profit homes and our for-profit corporations that have that understanding. They know that whether I'm taking the money from someone's pocketbook or from the state's pocketbook, I'm still making money and they're my customer and I've got to please them. But that's not the norm.
Thinking along those lines, should someone be wary if a nursing home has a higher number of Medicaid and Medicare residents than another nursing home, especially Medicaid, just knowing how that may affect their finances?
No. I would not say for anyone to be what they're wary of and that to be what they're judge. I always tell people, first of all, go into that facility. Yes, look them up online and look at Medicare.gov and even talk to me, that's fine, but you need to go in there and see for yourself. I've got some for-profit homes that have 80% Medicaid that I could walk down there and you can't tell a difference. You can clearly not tell who's on Medicaid and who's private pay. There's a different atmosphere. It just seems like everyone's at home. That's a for-profit home, and, you know, I couldn't tell the difference. But then there's other homes that you walk into, and you can tell who's on Medicaid, or all of the complaints that come in only come from really the Medicaid recipients. So if that's not it, I mean, it's basically that individual's home, and yes, an owner may own multiple homes, but even the administration there, they're going to have what am I trying to do here? Am I trying to make a profit for my corporation, or am I truly trying to serve and provide better care to the residents? You can tell that when you walk in the door. And it doesn't have anything to do with the payer source. It has everything to do with that person who's in charge of running that home.
And what can you find out from talking to, say, residents or to family members?
That's what I would say do. I mean, the thing about it is go ahead and take the marketing tour of the facility. That's fine. And they're going to show you, here's where mom is going to have her dinner, and here's where mom's going to have activities, and here's where we're going to have the sing-along group in the front room. But if they walk through and talk to the residents, or have them talk to the resident council president, and say, tell me, how do you like living here? You know, how is it? How do they treat you? You know, and do it in a private setting. You know, just say, hey, do you mind if I talk to you in private over here? And just ask them a few questions. The residents are going to be honest. They're going to tell you really what's going on. You know, that's what, as an advocate, when we walk into the facilities, you know, we just say, hey, you know, tell me what's going on. And too many people discount what someone has to say in a long-term care facility. Just because they're sitting in a wheelchair and they're in their 80s, they feel like, well, they're really not going to know what to say. It doesn't matter. They're going to tell you. If somebody walks up and down the hallway and they hear somebody screaming over and over again, and no one is going to pay attention to that. If a family member or a potential resident is walking down and doing a tour and they hear the call lights on, and no one's really answering those call lights, that's what the problem is. They need to do that. I would also say do multiple visits. And, you know, a lot of times people say, well, I just don't have time for that. That seems so labor intensive. I would say go in the morning and maybe possibly even, you know, just come through and say, well, I'll walk through it around 7:30, 8 o'clock at night. There can be a different environment at different times. Everything could be all shiny and happy during the day when management is there, but then when they go home, things could kind of fall apart. It is well worth the effort to do that beforehand. And because whatever you put forward beforehand can save you a lot more effort on the back end of it.
Now, if people call your agency, can you are you able to give people some pointers and a basic outline of the sort of things they should do in looking for a nursing home?
Absolutely. Again, we always talk them through the process of the Medicare.gov website. Plus, we also kind of walk them through, if they feel very comfortable on the Internet, we kind of walk them through some different sites online. That's like the Medicare.gov website is purely the academic point of view. That's from the reports. That's from the surveys. But there are also other websites that are out there for more of a resident and family point of view. You know, as a family member, you know, they've said, okay, well, you know, I went there, I had mom, and I had these problems. So it's kind of nice to hear someone else's different point of view, and you can kind of weigh the two of those. We're also going to tell them, you know, very broadly about the different issues that we've had, whether it's just in the facility in general or whether it's with the administration or ownership. We're going to kind of make them aware of different things that we've had to deal with. We're going to cover issues. We're going to talk to them about, you know, their finances or the residents' potential finances. How much are they looking at that they have, you know, if they're looking for private pay, and how long is that going to last for them? We're going to explain to them, you know, what they need to be prepared for and how they can kind of look at the bigger picture. It's not just, well, I'm going to put mom in here, but it is, well, okay, does mom want to go there? Have you talked to mom? You know, what does mom feel? What is the ramifications going to be when everything's all said and done that first night and you leave to go home and she's there? So we're going to talk to them about those type of issues.
And I'm wondering if when you talk to people, or if you go out and say speaking events or meetings, what sort of questions are people most likely to have for you?
Are we talking residents and You mean potential residents and family members?
Yes.
Basically, what money is always a very big issue. You know, it's always, well, what am I supposed to do? You know, mom's only got this much, or should I do this, or should I do that? Family members are more, you know, more often than not, they're concerned about the money issue. We want mom to be able to be there. We want everything to be a smooth transition. Potential residents who call us are more concerned about having that autonomy, making sure that they keep the right to make their decisions. So in both cases, whether it's a potential resident or a family member, we always start out with the advance directives and the power of attorney for health care and for finances. We explain to them the true roles of a power of attorney of finances and health care, and how that can be revoked at any time, and the processes for choosing that, and then what those roles really mean, how that resident, even with the power of attorney, retains that right to make those decisions for as long as possible. And so we really try to center on that first to build a very good foundation. And then the questions then start pouring in. Well, I thought I could sell my mom's house to pay for this, you know, and mom is sitting over there shaking her head saying, no, I don't want you to sell my house. So it just kind of like spirals into that. We deal a lot with the autonomy issue and then the money issue when it comes down to how do we apply for public aid. You know, what will Medicare cover if she needs to go to the hospital and then return? You know, are we looking at that? But also, one of our roles is also to educate about the different community-based services that are available, because everyone should remain in the least restrictive environment available to them for as long as possible. So whereas the son may say, well, you know what, I think mom, she's getting a little forgetful, I think it's time I move her into the nursing home, and mom says, no, wait a minute, I want to stay home, we really do a lot of education as to what is available, especially in the Champaign-Urbana area. You guys are so blessed with so many great service providers that are out there that can provide those caregiver advisors and respite services and homemaker services that are out there, and for, you know, elder abuse to protect someone that's still out there in the community. And you've got Faith in Action and RSVP volunteer programs that could help someone, you know, take them shopping or go into the store for them. So you've got a lot of great programs that even though somebody, a family member may be scared for mom to stay at home, there's still so many options to allow them to stay at home for as long as possible. So we do a lot of education in that as well, too.